The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
Welcome to Between the Synapse. I'm your host, Mark Tobin. Thanks for joining me on Between the Synapse. We're talking about finales today with the end of Mad Men, the end of Letterman, and high school graduations going on around the country. But before we get there, we've got a few other things we want to cover. You may have seen on the notice, guest today, Larry Bud Melman. I wish he was. Ghosts of Christmas Past. You never know. We will see. A couple quick reminders. If you want to listen to the podcast for this or any other previous Between the Synapse show, you can do so. Just check it out on my website, which is pretty easy to find, betweenthesynapse.com. And you can also subscribe if you've not yet done so, and you will receive notices of future shows. You can also check out all the very cool material that's available on my website as well. You can also reach me at Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. So check that out. And if you're so inclined, you know, like my Facebook page, I'd be much appreciative. So look, we on the show always talk about the NBA playoffs and the LA Clippers. I don't remember a bigger choke job, I think, since Linda Lovelace shot her last film. Game 6 against the Rockets, my goodness. They were up by 19 in the third quarter and totally blew that game. They were in control of the series. They were up 3-1 in Game 6 at home, leading by 19 points. And they were on their way to what had been the first ever appearance in the Western Conference Finals. That's right. They had never even made it past this round of the playoffs. And they were going to make club history by going to the Western Conference playoffs for the very first time after numerous playoff failures, after receiving God knows how many lottery picks over the years. They were there. 3-1, 19 points up. The Rockets looked disheveled. They were arguing with the refs. They were getting teed up. Looked like it didn't have a prayer. And then three things, I think, started to happen. And the first is on the coach. And I think that this is always a mistake. Just ask the 1983 University of Houston Cougars. They started running the clock instead of running their offense. And anytime you take a team, particularly like the Clippers, who are not particularly good at a set offense, they are fluid. They try to get most of their points in the fast break, or at least with quick looks at the basket, trying to get down the court quickly. They are not nearly as good in a set as a lot of other teams. And they started trying to run clock. And that was their first mistake, because that allowed the Houston Rockets defense to start to come alive and become a real issue for the Clippers. So you obviously have to credit the Rockets. They never gave up. They played loose. They had obviously nothing to lose, down 3-1 and 19 points. And with the Clippers focused on a historic victory, they clearly got tied. It looked like there was a cap on their basket. Every time they got a good look, which, because of the Rockets' defense, wasn't that often, but they still had a number of good looks. They just missed. And you could see they were hesitating on the shots. You could see they were hesitating whether to pass or whether to take a shot. And they passed up numerous open looks. They shot something like they didn't hit a bucket in the last almost 7 minutes of the game. And they were outscored something like almost 50 to 10, I think, from the point that they were 19 points up. I credit the Rockets for hanging in. I credit Coach Kevin McHale for making the lineup adjustments, and also for keeping Harden on the bench in the fourth quarter when the team that was on the court was making its run. But the Clippers would not have had to do a whole lot in order to maintain a margin which was going to be sustainable for a victory when you were 19 points up. And, you know, I hate to call a team a choking team. It's not something that I would say lightly, because, you know, you always have an opponent, and that opponent never gives up, typically. But this was a meltdown. And I just, you rarely see anything this bad in professional sports, particularly for a franchise which has struggled as greatly as the LA Clippers. So we move on. We're in the finals of each conference. It is 1-0 Cavs over the Hawks and 1-0 Warriors over the Rockets. My quick predictions are, let's see, Cavs, Hawks. I got to say, I see this thing going 7 games. I know the Cavs won last night in Atlanta. But I see this going 7. It could go either way, and I don't know. I'm gonna have to say Atlanta in game 7 because of the home court advantage. In the other series, I know I'll probably take some grief for this, but I gotta think the Warriors are gonna hold on, probably in 6 games over the Rockets. But look, I counted the Rockets out once. And so who knows what might happen there. You never know. Anyway, so moving on from the NBA playoffs, last week we started talking about the Republican presidential candidates, and I mentioned that I have started a list. And it basically covers 29 of, I guess, the candidates who are either declared, mentioned, or exploring a presidential race. And I have put them into 3 categories. Tier 1, those are people who have some chance of actually winning the primary. Tier 2 are a couple names, big names, have some money, but don't really have much of a realistic chance of winning. And then Tier 3. And the Tier 3 are people who you and I have probably never heard of, and if you have heard of them, probably wish you hadn't. And so what I've done with the Tier 1 and Tier 2 candidates is I have ranked them and giving them a star standard on how I perceive their wackiness. And wackiness, as I mentioned, is a highly subjective standard. I can't say that I've quantified it in any real way. It's you know, as I mentioned last week, it's like pornography. You know it when you see it. And I've got 5 5-star candidates. I've got 1 4-star. I've got 3 3-star, 3 2-star, and then I've got 5 1-star. And I will be publishing this on my blog at BetweenTheSynapses.com just as soon as I can. So what I thought I would do today before we start talking about finales is to highlight a couple candidates. One of the Tier 1 candidates who has received the sought-after 5-star wacky acclamation, and then another of the Tier 3 candidates that I mentioned that you know, we'd never heard of, but I just did a little bit of research in order to help us understand exactly who is running for president. So let's start off with Bobby Jindal. Bobby is the governor of Louisiana. He has been in that position for quite some time now. And I've actually had the privilege of knowing him and working with him a little bit. And when I first did, I was truly impressed. He's a very, very smart person, very personable. At the time, really seemed, you know, reasonable and on top of the issues. I think as he has garnered attention for national office and as he has moved towards exploring a presidential bid over the last few years, however, that seems to have changed. And though it is with a heavy heart that I just can't avoid but give Bobby Jindal a 5-star wackiness rating. And just to give you an idea of why, first of all, Bobby is not his birth name. It's an Indian name, and he wanted an American name, and so he chose Bobby, which, you know, Bobby's a great name, and I have no problem with it, but he chose it, and I know this doesn't disqualify somebody from being president just because of where they got their name from, but he chose it because of Bobby from the Brady Bunch. Bobby was the youngest brother. I mean, you'd think maybe he would have gotten Greg, who was the, you know, the older brother, something like that. But no, I mean, he chose Bobby of all the names from the Brady Bunch as his name. Now that, as I said, doesn't really disqualify qualify somebody for a 5-star rating in and of itself. But it certainly does set the tone. I think what really shocked and surprised me was his admission in a book he wrote that he performed an exorcism. And there's a lot of controversy over this because apparently it wasn't really a voluntary exorcism, apparently, in terms of the person who was being exorcised. So I don't know personally where he was trained in exorcism, but it was during his time at Brown University when he was a student. He was a member of a prayer group, and a person was suffering from emotional distress and after her, I guess, diagnosis with skin cancer. And so she was acting strangely, and apparently the woman collapsed into a seizure. And so Bobby and other students began to perform an exorcism on her, and she tried to flee on 2 separate times, apparently, and allegedly was physically restrained. Jindal claims that not only was the demon exorcised, but the woman's skin cancer was miraculously cured. Now, I've not heard from the woman or seen any actual comments, but that is what has been written and published on the issue, and also included in his own book, at least certain of those details. So I don't know, you know, number one, as I said, where he got his training. You know, can anybody perform an exorcism, or do you have to have special training? And how did he know that it was, you know, miraculously cured? And then the thing is, you know, so this was during college. And, you know, he could just say, oh, this is something that, you know, oh, college prank or, you know, whatever. But, and people would say, oh, okay, you know, that's fine.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
There are over 140 million products manufactured worldwide. It is impossible to know the ingredients in these products, especially those made overseas. Stan Salat, creator of the HSF Mark and the Counterfeit Mark Alliance, is the host of People to People, working together for your safety. Stan believes in our right to know the type and amount of hazardous materials in consumer products and whether they are counterfeit. Find out how you can protect yourself every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety. Tune in to the Voice America Variety channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
What can you find on Get Real Radio? Well, quite honestly, who you really are. Join host James Robinson each week for a program designed to reveal more about yourself and your world through words of wisdom and profound guests. You'll discover more about the spiritual movement and how it can work with you and alert you to problems you may not be aware of. It will educate, titillate, and enlighten your mind. Get Real Radio is broadcast live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This could end up being the best time of your week.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, we are back. And when I mean back, I think we're back online. Apparently, there was a little technical glitch. So I do apologize, and I'm not actually sure what you missed and what you heard, because I was still talking. And apparently, nobody was listening, but which actually may not be unusual. But still, I do apologize for that. So we were talking about Bobby Jindal, talking about his exorcism, and... you know, and once again, we're not even this wackiness part is not necessarily, you know, just on their policies. And but let me just say that oftentimes they do go hand in hand in terms of when you have some of these guys who do have some just kind of wacky stories like the ones we've been talking about with Bobby Jindal, that it does lead to some really, I would say, hyper far right policies, which are, you know, oftentimes not just outside the mainstream of you know, the most Americans, but are even outside the mainstream of a lot of conservatives. And so, you know, I think what Bobby Jindal has been trying to do is create a certain niche within the Republican primary voters so that that would then launch him into a continued campaign. And then, you know, who knows from there. But that's Bobby Jindal for you. And that's just a couple of the reasons why he has been awarded 5 stars by the Between the Synapse Republican presidential primary wackiness chart. So I did want to briefly talk about one other guy, John Dummett. Maybe he pronounces it Dume. I hope. I don't know. D-U-M-M-E-T-T. It couldn't be pronounced Dummett. That's just too easy. John, okay, I'm just going to call him Dummett. You know, he is running for president again, I believe, and he is he's basically running kind of against Obama because, well, I think Clinton too, but because Obama is an Islamic fascist who is a puppet of Saul Alinsky, who apparently was a capo for Al Capone. I didn't have time to research that whole story. And for George Soros, he's also, by the way, he's very proud of himself. He is the computer programmer who discovered the forged birth certificate for Obama, but of course he had nothing to do with releasing it, and he takes credit for many other aspects of the attacks on Obama. So, if you are interested in learning more about John Dummett, he wants to restore the Constitution to America. I always, you know, I laugh, but I also cringe when I see this, you know, restoring the Constitution to America. You know, we can talk about issues that impact our Constitution. And we talk about that all the time, and there are many serious issues that we deal with every day that address how we, you know, view the Constitution, cases that need to be viewed in accordance with the Constitution, and your views on the Constitution will certainly impact how you view that, and particularly the justices of the Supreme Court and their views on the Constitution. However, when you talk about restoring the Constitution, that makes no fucking sense, okay? That's the only thing that I can say. You know, I know that it sounds good to certain people. You know, we got to restore the Constitution to America, but it is completely nonsensical because we live by the Constitution every single day. Every single day that we operate under our two-party system and our government, and every time that we have separation of, you know, church and state, and every time that our military does the military work and our police does the police work, and you know, all sorts of constitutional rights that exist every single day, 24/7. So, you know, it's a good line, and there are people who believe that you know, the Constitution exists of only, you know, maybe one or two clauses. I do suggest that they maybe read the whole thing before they start talking about, you know, restoring the Constitution to America. Anyway, that's enough about John Dummett. But those he is one of the tier three candidates on the wackiness chart for Between the Synapses. So now the title of the show is Finales. And the reason being, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is Mad Men, which had been on, I believe, for 7 years, concluded its series on Sunday night. I don't know if you're a fan or had the pleasure of watching that show, but certainly you at some point, I would think, watched Letterman, at least on occasion. And Letterman concluded 33 years on the air. And I know I talked about Letterman on the show 2 or 3 weeks ago. But, you know, it is sentimental, and I know that it doesn't, you know, impact my life or anybody's life in a real way, you know, in terms of, you know, what's going to happen with your life. But certainly waking up in a Letterman-less world, is different and something, you know, that we'll kind of have to get used to, and maybe it's you know, partially an age thing, because he was there since college, and now he won't be. And so, what does that say about me? But you know, his impact, as I'm sure you've heard from everybody, has been just extraordinary. And I, you know, made an effort to record, you know, the last couple weeks of shows so that I could catch them, and really, you know, enjoyed watching him, mostly because, you know, he really tried to avoid a lot of the sentimentality and try to keep consistent with, you know, who he is as he got to the end. And I thought the finale captured that. I must say, though, and I, you know, maybe this, I'm not sure what it means yet. So maybe if you want, you can help me interpret the meaning of this. If you do, if you have any ideas, give me a call at 866-472-5788 if you want to talk about either Letterman or Mad Men. So I'm watching Letterman. I started about 15 minutes after the broadcast on the DVR. And, you know, I'm watching it, and I get to the point where he is saying goodbye. You know, this is it. And he's about, I don't know, a minute into it. You know, he says how he's done, you know, 6,000 plus shows, and, you know, in typical Letterman fashion, and there's, you know, there was a analysis, and there's been 8 minutes of laughter, you know, in all those shows. And then he was about to say something else, and boom. The show, I guess, was something like an hour and 10 minutes, roughly. I don't know exactly. However, my DVR didn't adjust to record the remaining 5 or 10 minutes. So I did not get to watch the finale of the finale. And I tried to do that online, but it wasn't up yet. And I don't know if it'll be up later today that I can find it, but it was really frustrating to do that. However, maybe it's appropriate in some, you know, form or fashion. I don't know that for me, Letterman would kind of go out that way and not come to some sort of you know, finality in that way. Maybe I'll always have Letterman. For me, it'll never end because he was sort of a major influence in how I view comedy and just one of my, you know, favorite, if not, you know, really the favorite talk show host that I've ever, you know, had the pleasure of watching. And quite frankly, I'm not sure there'll ever be another person on TV who kind of represented my generation as well as he did, because the people on are really more focused on younger demographics, as they should. But I think that's what probably added to the sadness of Letterman finishing. So as I said, for me, you know, I still got a couple minutes left, and that's probably how I'm going to leave it. By the way, if you did have a chance, and if you didn't watch it, you know, close your ears for a second. But I think the funniest line all night, he had some of his favorite celebrities do the top 10 list for the last time. And the funniest one by far was when he had Seinfeld come out and do one, and it was kind of funny. But then Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who, as you may recall, was Seinfeld's co-star, came out a little after him, and her line was, thanks for letting me take part in another hugely disappointing series finale, obviously aimed at the finale of Seinfeld, but it was just hysterical, particularly if you look over, they showed Jerry's face, and you know, so it was both apropos of, you know, late night taking a dig at its own humor and comedy and integrity of the show, its own show, but also getting a little dig at Seinfeld, who had been a constant guest of Letterman. So very funny. You should take a look at it if you have that chance. We're going to talk about Mad Men, but first we've got to take a break. So why don't you stick around? See you on the other side.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
How do you achieve the utmost success in your life, career, faith, relationships, and more? It's all here in The Business of Living with host Scott Ventrella. Scott has experience as an executive coach, sought-after speaker, and lecturer. He and his guests will offer practical solutions and strategies to help you move to the next level of success, no matter where you are in your life and career. The Business of Living airs live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
American Heroes Network is a program for and about our American veteran heroes and their families. Join host Gary Ray as he shows what is being done to help our veterans and showcase the companies and organizations that are helping our veterans and their families rebuild their lives. Listen for American Heroes Network, live and powered by the Voice America Variety Channel, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to MVT at BetweenTheSynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, and welcome back to Between the Synapse. I am Mark Tobin, and I'm your host on this show. I don't know what the weather has been like in your world, but in Houston, you know, it's been awful. That is unless you like rain and thunderstorms all the time. And actually, just right before the show, as a matter of fact, it was thundering and raining, and I was afraid that it was going to make it difficult to hear from my studio, which probably could use a little more insulation, but from my studio here in beautiful Greenway Plaza in Houston, Texas. And I signed up for this thing. I've got this weather app. Everybody's got their favorite apps, and I've got this one thing. On the weather.com, you can sign up for lightning notices, and it will tell you when lightning strikes and where it is. So for example, earlier this morning, I got a number of notices, which is, never really a good thing. That will say, lightning struck 1.1 miles east-northeast of your current location. And that's always good to know because then I know not to go, 1 mile east-northeast of my current location, presuming I knew how to go east-northeast of my current location. What I really, though, want is I want an app that is it's a little bit more clear, provides just a bit more clarity, and that's the Run for Your Life app, and that is when something is happening and you get the app, it just says Run for Your Life, and that means just get the hell out of whatever you are and get to safety. It doesn't have to say what it is, it just whatever you're doing, get out of there, just run for your life. You just make a noise, I don't care what, but that's kind of the app that I would like. So, if anybody's got any ideas, shoot me an email or Twitter, Between T Synapse, and let's talk. All right, so the Mad Men also had its finale on Sunday night, and Mad Men was just one of the a really terrific, well crafted show, and something that the kind of show you just don't see that often. And what I realized just, in thinking about the ending, Matthew Weiner, who was the showrunner, creator, sometimes director, writer, he had been a writer on The Sopranos. And actually, he had taken Mad Men to HBO, and they turned him down. Then he took it to AMC, and, the rest is history. But I never realized how similar Don Draper was to Tony Soprano. And when I saw the ending, once again, if you haven't seen the ending, the finale, and you plan to, now's a good time not to listen. But it really occurred to me that they're very similar characters. Now, I'm not suggesting that Don was offing people. in his spare time. But here you had both Don and Tony, you had two enigmatic, successful people. They both had, dubious backgrounds. Tony had, had suffered, had been abused by his dad and had all sorts of issues. Don, had changed his identification, had grown up in a bordello and, all sorts of things. Both were really conflicted in terms of what they did. Tony, went to therapy, and it was, though he liked being the boss, was certainly conflicted over the line of work he was in. And the same with Don Draper. As good as he was, being the creative person in advertising, he constantly was challenging its importance as well as his significance by being a part of that world. Don wasn't able, therapy wasn't like it was back, now like it was back in the, late 50s and 60s. And it wasn't until the final episode that Don finally got at least some pseudotherapy in the form of, an early 70s kind of communal kind of hippie-ish gathering. And both finales were sort of similar and kind of left the endings to the imagination. I got the sense that both men, were able to kind of merge their hatred for their respective jobs with the understanding of how good they were at it and go on into their respective positions. Tony is the big mob boss, and Don as a creative director. I think it was pretty clear in the finale of Mad Men that as he was sitting there on the cliff doing meditation, and the smile arose from his face, and then they cut to the real commercial of "It's a Real Thing" from Coke, and it had been discussed that Coke was a big client that he was going to be able to work on had he not quit his advertising agency, that he would go back to his life and eventually create that commercial. I think there was a little more closure, obviously, in Mad Men than there was in The Sopranos, but I think the ending was the same, and that was both these men matured to the point where they understood what they were good at. They understood that they struggled, but that they at least reached a point in their lives where they were okay with it, and they were able to actually utilize that struggle in their work. Quite frankly, once a character does that, there's no need to have the show because the conflict is over. That character has resolved that inner conflict. That character has incorporated that inner conflict into something positive and something that is useful, as opposed to something that is potentially a career killer for Don Draper, or for Tony Soprano, an actual killer. I really found that observation to be, very, very interesting in seeing that. And, in many ways, on a more broad perspective, the attributes of these two characters, as I said, these are two of the most complex characters on TV that I think, we've seen and maybe we'll see for a while. And look, of course, they're both exaggerated. We know that. That has to happen for it to be interesting. This duality that I talked about of being unhappy with who they were yet being successful is, I think, a big reason why both shows were so successful. These are attributes that and issues that are not unknown, to many of the viewers who work in fields, which many people do, where they may question on occasion sort of the overall integrity, value, or ethics of whatever they're doing, whatever the service is, whatever the product is, whatever. I mean, it's not uncommon where you're involved in something maybe for years, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, hey, what am I doing? What am I working on? What is the purpose of this? Am I a part of something good, inherently good, or am I a part of something inherently bad? And I think that viewers were able to see that in both of these characters, even though one was, as I said, a mob boss. Yet, and, you know, it was in a distinctly American way, they both were able to, as I said, merge their issues and reach a level of maturity and satisfaction and move onward. That is the finale of Mad Men that I took away. And I think that is, you know, significant. Was it the greatest finale of all time? No. I mean, most finales of great shows aren't. There usually are just too many issues to wrap up. There were a couple things that were contrived at the end in order to get the characters in position to have these revelations or to have these conclusions. But for the most part, I did think it was good, and I particularly liked the ending. So you know, check that out. And if you haven't watched Mad Men and you're interested, you know, put it on your list on Netflix or whatever. It's certainly worth exploring. It just from a number of angles, and it as good as any show that I've seen. It included the history of both cultural and political, and in a subtle way, but in a very strong way, of the late 50s and 60s and you know, just watching how they progressed from how they looked and their clothes to how they responded to different events. And what I liked was they never, while they did respond to certain events, those events, the shows were never really about the events. They never changed their lives because, like most Americans, their lives just went on. You know, people grieved when there were assassinations. People were upset. People were mad, but life went on, and that's how Mad Men dealt with it. So check that out if you are so inclined. Well, we've got to take another break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about another kind of finale. So stick around.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said, "All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
We're back on Between the Synapse. I hope you are too. Thank you for listening. And always appreciate it. Yep, we've got podcasts, if that's your interest. Please check them out. They're on my blog at BetweenTheSynapse.com. All of them, you just they're over on the right side. And just scroll down, and you can have over a year's worth now of previous shows on a number of topics. Because that's what we do on Between the Synapse. We're not just stuck on certain kind of show. We will reinvent ourselves every week if we have to, and talk about whatever is important, and oftentimes we'll talk about what's not important, which sometimes can be a lot more entertaining. It just depends. But irrespective, they're all there. And, if you've got any ideas, if you want to hear about a certain subject or have a concept for a show, shoot me an email or Twitter. My Twitter is Between T Synapse. And my email is mbt@betweenthesynapse.com. It's that easy. You could be, could be like a, I'll make you like an assistant producer or something like that. But I can't pay you, but just to be clear. But anyway, if you have any good ideas, I'm open. So let me know. So as I said before, we're talking about finales. And because of the end of the Mad Men era and the end of David Letterman, which obviously was much longer and in the long run, impactful. I really am curious to see how Stephen Colbert does. Only because, we really don't know. We don't know what Stephen Colbert is really like. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe you've seen him on something else, or maybe you're best friends with him. You go out for beers with him, and I don't know. If you do, please share. Please call up the show and let me know. But he's always had this this alter ego that he did on the Colbert Report, and I don't know what we're gonna see, and hopefully it's gonna be great. But obviously he's got a really, really hard person to follow, and he also has a lot of competition with all the other shows on now, and David, by the way, he was never like, I don't know when he was ever in at least the earlier time slot, he was number one. I mean, there might have been occasions when he was, but he was often number two, and then even later, number three. It never seemed to faze him. It didn't change the show, which was, I thought, was always a good thing, because, I thought he was what he was, and, not going to reinvent himself after so long. But it's a different climate than it was when he originally came on. And Dave, remember, came on after the Tonight Show. So he had a lot more ability to do some crazy things at that time than at the earlier hour, sort of the conventional wisdom. And now, you're also competing against things like, the Comedy Channel, all the stuff on the internet and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So it'll be interesting, and it'll be tough. And that's why I think most people were correct when they say that there'll never be another Letterman. I mean, who knows, but probably right on that. Want to talk about another kind of finale, and you know, it's really not the same. I actually went to the dictionary to look this up, because finale is defined as the last part of a piece of music, a performance, or a public event, especially when particularly dramatic or exciting. So I think the conclusion of Mad Men and Letterman, those are finales. And, you know, then, you know, we've got the grand finale. I don't know what really difference is than a finale. It's like, is that the end to the finale, I guess? That's when the, you know, they let loose all the fireworks. But anyway, high school graduations, and as well as, you know, college graduations, are occurring this month, various times around the country. And though I wrote up the show and kind of included high school graduations under this topic, I you know, I'm thinking about it, it's really not an accurate description to say that the graduation is a finale, to be kind of technical about it. You know, it is, yes, it is the end of high school, and for some students it is the end of their you know, formal learning. And for others it's you know, really almost just the beginning, depending upon what their future holds. But you know, finale doesn't really I think apply, because in many ways it is so much more of a transition than a finale, and that transition, hopefully, you know, from my experience going through it just this past week, is not, you know, not one of a big conclusion. The person, you know, your child doesn't walk across the stage, you know, get the diploma, take the picture, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's over. Yes, high school is over, and usually by that age, it's a good thing that it is, because they're ready to move on. But it is not the finale. And what I say in the transition, that, you know, just crossing that stage in and of itself is, it is important, and it is significant. Pardon me. But it's really kind of the first step, and at least between, I think, parents and the graduate, that is a first step from having a, you know, sort of the traditional parent-child relationship into to something that is more towards having, you know, a relationship between a parent and, you know, a child who is now, you know, becoming an adult, and understanding that, as bittersweet as that might be, is also really exciting, because I think the future for the children, and hopefully for your child, is something that is to be looked forward to, and that they're looking forward to, and that's what I found this week. And so to all the graduates of, whether it's high school, college, graduate school, whatnot, know that this was not your finale. This is just another stop on your destination, and I hope that your next stop is even greater and grander than the one before. That's it for today on Between the Synapse. Join me next week, and I will talk to you then. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.